what most people say. Podcast. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of What Most People Think, and I have returned from another weekend trip to Ibiza. Am I getting too old for this? I think you're all saying yes, but you know what? I had a laugh and I've returned to, I don't know how long I was out there, because I've returned to a very different news cycle. When I went, it was all Labour chaos. Now, it's still a little bit of Labour chaos, but they're brandishing their new investments proudly. And I was trying to think of how could I make a conversation about Labour's investment round interesting. And I thought the only man for that is Constantine Kissin, who I'm glad to say is back on the show this week. Welcome back to the show, mate.
Good to be back, mate.
Yeah, I mean, I'm putting a lot on you there saying we're going to make Labour's investment round interesting. That's not really, I mean, we're going to talk about other stuff, of course we are.
I still can't get over the fact that you keep going to Ibiza your age, mate. You're far too old,
mate. Have you seen, we're not even the oldest ones there, we're not even close, man. There's 60 year olds on the dance floor. It's all changed, mate. 60 year olds are the only ones that can afford it. 25 euros for a fucking vodka tonic.
I do not want to see a bunch of people our age with their tops off on the dance floor, mate.
I'm not going to take my top off. I mean, I think that would be some sort of hate crime. You know, there were guys with their tops off. And, you know, I'm at that age where there was a little bit of rain where I was just, oh, I said, should I go back to the hotel room and get McCarty, babe? You know, it's that sort of age. It's that sort of age. But what can I say? When you love this, what kind of music do you love, mate?
I'm really weird in that I don't really listen to music very much at all.
Okay, well, that was this week's What Most People I can't speak to people who don't love music. I find it. Well, so what's your thing then? What do you sort of listen to, or is it reading, or?
Yeah, I listen to like history podcasts and stuff like that. But I use occasionally music like to get in the mood for something. So if I want to be creative, I'll listen to some music that's for that, or if I want to like pump myself up for a workout, I'll listen to some rap. But I'm not like, oh, I'll go and see a music. Is it a gig? I don't even know what you call it. I'm just so not.
So sad. I feel so bad for you now. I mean, the fact.
I feel bad for me.
Yeah, but the only time that you listen to it is rap as a way of getting yourself psyched up. That was unexpected. That would be the thing that the listener will take away, is just the image. I reckon, is it Lose Yourself by Eminem? Do you go like proper for the master text?
No, that's a bit basic. There's better stuff than that. 50 Cent has a very good lineup of songs for like getting yourself in the mood for a workout.
So is this when you're backstage, you're there with Jordan Peterson, there's you and Jordan going, Mum's going to knock you out. I'm going to knock you out. And he's like, well, knocking people out is actually a very primitive form of expression. That, I was trying to do a Jordan Peterson voice. That was more Kermit there, wasn't it?
Well, Kermit is very similar to Jordan, but you were doing something halfway in between the two.
Yeah, man of 1,000 voices. Well, maybe man of 7 voices. But look, man, you've had great things going on. You've been doing stuff. Of course, you were on tour with Jordan Peterson. I think that was a while ago now. But since then, you've hit the 1 million subscribers mark for Trigonometry. So let's have a round of applause. What an achievement, man. That's unreal. What did you do with Francis to celebrate?
We had a nice lunch, mate. Like,
fucking hell, you boys, no gigs. You had a nice lunch.
We had a nice lunch. But the thing is, this is going to sound really wanky now, but when you're doing something you really love and enjoy, like all of these milestones, they don't actually feel that important, because the process itself is the thing that I told you it would sound wanky. You're looking at me like I'm a knob, and I appreciate it. I know what you mean. But truthfully, yeah, we had a nice meal with our team. We have a bunch of people that work for us now. You know, it is a big achievement. We're very pleased with it. You don't see many British podcasts full stop getting to that point. And that's true. Americans, it's a lot easier because there's a way bigger potential audience. And we have a big American audience as well. But we always feel like it's the beginning. So we're going to keep grinding as hard as we have been to get to 2 and 5 and 10 and beyond.
Jesus Christ. See, that was when you sounded like, you know, those kind of dictators where clearly 1 million, when you said we're going to get to, I thought you were going to say like 1.25 million and you went 2, 5, 10. You went up in such leaps there, Constantine.
I spent million. Too much time in America, man. So I have that American mind. So it's like, yeah, man, let's do it. But yeah. No, I do feel that the sky is the limit with what we're doing. We see lots of other people doing it very, very successfully. You know, the Lex Friedmans of the world and lots of other people. Stephen Bartlett, whose show was just on Diary of a CEO, he's approaching 10 million. So it's all very, very realistic.
Did he mention Huel while you were talking to him?
No.
But I do think he's like, you know, that 7 degrees of separation with Kevin Bacon, like how quickly he can get back to mentioning Huell. He seems like he's quite intense. Was it quite intense to be around him?
I would think I'm way more intense than him, and you and I seem to get on fine. No, Stephen's very chill. He was very relaxed. He's probably the best interviewer that I've ever sat across from as an interviewee for a podcast format where he's getting you to talk about your opinions and your life and stuff. He was really fantastic.
Well, that'll be because all the slow release Huell. So there you go. I got in for him. Yeah. So the subjects that we are going to be discussing today, we're going to be looking at Labour's big investment round. They're very proud of the money that's coming in. Was it all because of them or some of the previous government? We'll talk about that. Also, Louise Hayde, the Transport Secretary, got in a bit of trouble. And, you know, is there still that issue at the heart of Starmer's government where there are people pulling in other directions? And Elon Musk didn't turn up He wasn't invited. So we'll talk about that. But also the fact that Elon launched his rocket, his big rocket, and then he brought it back down to Earth. So I will be asking Constantine, does anyone really give a shit about space travel other than like the news at 10? They're obsessed with it. Does anyone care? And then finally, in the patron only, Kamala Harris, she has made a series of pledges, specifically voting sort of giveaways to black men. And we're going to ask, is it racist to sort of like, you know, just... Well, you're going to have to listen because you honestly won't believe how stereotypical some of these are. New patrons. I'm sure you've remembered how we do it here. New patrons, they get it early ad-free and with bonus content. We've got Helen Wilcock, who I think is a returning patron there. So obviously after the first of the month, people should check their accounts in case their bank card has changed. We've got Frank Mihailovic. Frank, that's from your neck of the woods, isn't it, mate? Mihailovic?
No, you're doing well in Serbia, mate. I didn't realise the podcast goes to Southern Europe, mate, but it's good to know.
Wasn't he tried at The Hague for something?
Either that or he played left back for Lazio, one of the two.
Yeah, it's either a war crime or played for an Italian football club. We got a guy called Simon Richard Jenner, who's just trying to throw so many first names at me that he's obfuscating the issue. Simon Jenner, maybe he's part of the ever-expanding... I haven't checked in with the Kardashians for a while. Maybe he's dating, like, Kendall. Isn't it weird, like, a young, sexy woman like that is named after a sort of really chintzy tourist town in the north of England?
Yeah, they do have form for changing to being sexually ambiguous or whatever the term is.
But also, just thinking, if, like, Kendall could be a name for a really hot, young American female, I was trying to think of others, like Batley, that would work, wouldn't it? Scarborough would work. It would work. We've come across something here. Any northern town name works as a name for a hot young female American celebrity. Whitley?
What about Bradford Jenner?
Oh my God. It all works. Just no. Blackpool? No. All right. We took it too far. Bradford Jenner. That fucking works. It works. We've also got Andy McKenna here. Andy McKenna sounds like a sort of FM radio DJ. Do you remember in the peak of like Drive Time? When Drive Time was a thing rather than traffic just being a permanent state now where the high streets of Britain now look like that main road that runs through Jakarta in Indonesia. Have you ever been to Jakarta in Indonesia?
No,
it's
mate.
Got a main road that runs through it. It's just really bad infrastructure. But every minute sort of like throughout the night, you look out and there's a traffic jam. And that is now most towns in Britain.
It does feel like that, doesn't it? I can't tell if I'm just getting older and grumpier or really the infrastructure issue in Britain is actually getting worse continually.
Going on to that, some listener letters. We got a patron as well, I think, called Will Farmer. And we were talking about political rebrands. You know how like Tom Twohart was suddenly saying his name was Tom Twohart. And Kemi Badenoch became Kemi Badenoch. Apparently, Robert Jenrick is putting it about that his name's Bobby J. Bobby J does sound like the middle of about seven American brothers. You know, like that, the mulleted.
No, he sounds like he was at one of those P. Diddy parties helping him out as his like junior assistant or something.
Just lubing up the young ones.
Bobby J lubing up the young ones.
Bobby J lubing up the young ones since 1972. I think you should go with Jenrick. I've said it. Just one word, a Jenrick, like Beyonce, like Kendrick, like Drake. Jenrick. The new manifesto from Jenrick.
I think you're massively overestimating how cool he is.
Yeah, I think that might be true. David Domain, the main talking point, our super patron, David Domain. So I was on News Quiz, or I was hosting News Quiz on Friday of last week, which we'll come on to again in a moment. But David Domain was picking up from last week. So I was basically talking about, you know, Sue Gray was moved out of her job within 3 months. And we talk about famous Sues, like who are the most famous Sues? David says that we got Sue Holderness, who played Marlene in Only Fools and Horses. Got Sue Pollard. Did you come to the country after the Sue Pollard years?
When was that?
That would have been Heidi High. Do you remember the program Heidi High?
No.
Just find one episode and watch it. I remember as a kid, there was nothing wrong with it. It was slightly creepy. It was very weird. It was about a British holiday camp. It was one of those things that was made in the 80s, but about a British holiday camp in the 50s.
I mean, there was a lot of creepy things on British TV in the 80s, let's be honest, mate. And I'm not just talking about the programmes either.
No, we're talking about the presenters, most of the background staff. What most people think. So the thank you from me is just to everybody that listened to me host News Quiz. It was a good laugh. I got sort of lucky with the news cycle in that there was plenty to say about Labour. I was trying to get, Constantine, that Labour's 14 weeks of chaos. I was trying to get that trended. And obviously I got some kickback from that. But I did take the piss out of the Tory leadership race as well. But you know what it's like online. People just literally ignore the facts and try and make out that it was a party political broadcast for the Tories. But on Facebook, they posted a clip of me taking the piss out of working from homers. Now, I know from even talking about it on this podcast, they are some of the most defensive people. I've had like patrons have a pop at me back. So I know that it's a contentious area, but I can't help myself. But they put the clip out on Facebook, mate. It's one of the worst pylons I've had. Probably the worst I've ever had. People were basically going, his stuff is hateful, his stuff is divisive, it's nasty. It's all the stuff that all the right-wingers think that I've stopped being and should be more of, right? This is what the left-wingers think I still am. But the best one, I think, the most fucking deranged one, was on Instagram. I've just got to read this out to you now. So the clip was about working from home. Nothing to do with politics, just about working from home. This guy replied, "Tory scum, you lost. Get over it. Get over it again and keep getting over it. Go further and further and further over the horizon to oblivion. Take Trump, Orban, Putin and all the other demigods with you." Wow. What a fucking fruitcake.
Well, that's the sort of people we need to stop hate, mate. He sounds very chill and relaxed, doesn't he?
I mean, just like how he can go from me, basically as a routine where I take the piss out of working from home, but essentially take out the piss out of my own laziness. He gets from that within the space of about 40 words to Tory scum, to that I'm somehow aligned with Vladimir Putin. I mean, I don't know. Is Putin from home, working from home sort of guy, do you reckon? Is he...
He's got a lot of home, so he's probably constantly working from home, mate.
He's got about 17 dashes.
That's good knowledge, mate. That's good
Thank
knowledge.
Thank you, mate.
Not the right pronunciation, but good knowledge anyway.
So explain what a dasher is.
Dacha. It's a country house. So basically all people in Russia would have a flat in the city, and if they could afford, they would have a country house that they would go to on a weekend and, you know, grow food there and whatever. So it's basically like a getaway house in the countryside. But most people would have one, or many people would have one, as opposed to the UK, where you really have to be like super rich to have a country house to get away.
He lives in a dacha, a very big dacha in the country. Sorry, I was waiting.
Even I get the reference and I don't listen to me.
There you go. This is post Sue Pollard, mate. You know, the only reason I know that, because I'm a bloke of a certain age who, like you, listens to history podcasts and they talk about Russian leaders and they all had dachas, right? Lenin, he was always at his, wasn't he? In the big moments, Jesus.
Do you want a little bit of trivia?
I do.
After the Soviet Union collapsed, my dad very briefly was very wealthy and we actually lived on a dacha that used to belong, well, not belong, but used to be the dacha of one of the members of the Soviet Politburo.
Which one, mate? Are you allowed to say?
Yeah, he's well dead, mate, at this point. And so is the Soviet Union. You wouldn't know him. He was a guy called Pelcher, but it was a pretty giant mansion in the middle of a private forest with, you know, three teams of security guards on rotation and a kennel full of German shepherds and, you know, a separate house for the chauffeurs and stuff like that. It was pretty insane.
And then little did you know that before long you'd be paying $4,000 a month to rent a flat in London, you know. And
yeah, that probably costs less than a flat in London does now.
On that note, what is your fuck you?
Well, my fuck you, and I want to be clear, it's not all Labour voters. It's a very small subset of the people that voted for Labour. Because look, if you thought the Tories were shit, I understand and I agree. If you thought, let's give Labour a chance, I understand and I agree. But if you were one of these people that said the adults are back in the room, you deserve to die.
You do. Love it.
Because, I mean, the idea that these people were going to be more morally conscious, more principled, better in some sort of superior personal way, it's just absurd. And if you ever pretend that that was the case, all you were doing is gaslighting. I mean, this whole phrase pisses me off so much because look at what they're doing.
Well, the grown-ups, I always think if you've ever said the grown-ups are back in the room, it's such a wanky phrase. You'd sort of think the only person that would say that in reality is the character of Will from The Inbetweeners. That's how he would describe himself. Oh, the grown-ups are back in the room. Not sort of with not understanding that the term grown-up is in itself subjective and it is also pan-political. You could have grown-up sensible thinkers on any wing of politics, but the idea that it's exclusive to one small subset of the center left. I would put in that I would if we had a dictatorship together that we did job share, that would be very undictator-like, but there you go. And I'd also put in it people that say do better. Unless you're my favorite teacher or my parent, and actually all of those are dead, then don't you dare ever tell me to do better. And I've just realized that now everybody will continually tell me to do better. Okay, on the subject of Labour, let's get into a little roundup of another, not a tumultuous week, but a mixed week in the heart of government. So we should all be really pleased now. Thank God for the grown-ups and the adults and the childminders in the room, because Labour, Rachel Reeves, was very proud to announce £64 billion worth of, they've secured investment. And there's probably a reason, Constantine, that they used the word secured there rather than gained or won, because it turns out not all of it was new. They didn't get £64 billion in the 3 months that they've been in. And I'm a little torn here because they've sort of wanted to blame all the bad stuff on the Tories, but take the credit for some good stuff, which it seems some of it was agreed before they came. But they also do have a bit of a shitty inheritance on some level. Do we just let them take the credit for this and say, all right, go on, let's have something positive for the government?
The issue for me, I think if you broaden it out a little bit more, is first of all, where's this investment going? And they're talking about building houses, which is a great thing to do, really important. But that's not investment in the sense that you're not creating businesses and jobs that are going to run. You're going to build the houses and that's it, right? So you're not creating a business that will still be here 30 years from now. And also, they're about to destroy business in the upcoming budget by massively hiking up capital gains tax. And they've already made employment much more difficult with the changes they've made to what they call workers' rights. But every time you increase workers' rights, you make it more difficult for employers, right? So what they're about to do with capital gains is essentially drive everyone who can leave the country with their business out of the country. And it's already happening. I don't know if you know this. The UK is losing more billionaires than any country in the world.
And consumer confidence is sliding as well, generally.
Yeah, but the consumer confidence is a separate issue. I'm talking about business. The reason I bring up business is we are driving people who create jobs and create wealth out of the country. And they're about to increase capital gains tax, which means the people who already have capital and the people who are planning to start businesses aren't going to start it anywhere in this country, and they're going to go abroad. And I know loads of people who are in that position who are taking their existing businesses out of the country or who are planning to start their businesses elsewhere. So it's all well and good getting a few billion here and a few billion there to build houses. It's good and it's important. But if you create a society and an economy which essentially is not business friendly, then all of this other bullshit isn't going to matter, because there's just not going to be the people to create the jobs, to pay the tax, to support everything that we need to put money into.
No, I agree with what you're saying. I mean, if you also remember that the Tories put corporation tax up to 25%, yeah, one of the biggest hike, you know, I can remember in my lifetime. So the Tories put it up by 6%. Then you're putting up capital gains tax. I mean, then it looks like they're going to raise national insurance as well as well as the capital gains tax. I mean, you put it that way, it actually is impressive that they've managed to get £64 billion worth of fucking anything. I mean, it is. Maybe it's just because people think that, you know, well, at least we know that the government in this country is going to be Labour for the next 5 years and there'll be some stability with that. But I do worry. But the thing is, Constantine, is they've said that Britain is open for business. And we always know. when has any, I mean, maybe apart from some of the more extreme left-wing totalitarian regimes, when has any country in the world ever just said, just for a minute, just look, you know, just hung up the, just closed, be back soon. We've just got a couple of bits going on here.
We're
going
to do a little bit of communism, so we're shut for business for the next 5 years because Comrade Corbyn's been elected. No, they don't. And this is the thing with Starmer. The one bit of credit I do think he deserves is he talks a very, very good game. He's been very good at talking a good game and appealing across the board to people who are socially conservative and people who are socially liberal all at once. You know, he's been very good at sort of signaling that he's, you know, pro-Britain and patriotic, and he's got an op-ed in The Sun in which he talks about brickies and sparkies and all of this stuff. But at the end of the day, I judge people not on what they say, but on what they do. And if you make it way more difficult for small businesses to operate, which is what he's doing, you're going to destroy this country's economy. And no amount of sloganeering is going to help.
You're right that he's mentioned brickies and sparkies. But in his investment speech, he also mentioned the fact that he played the flute again. If I was one of his new team, because he's got his new team around him, Morgan McSweeney, I'd just say, it's all good, Keir. Keep it up with it, but just shut the fuck up about the flute. Seriously, man.
I'm glad you're focusing on the big picture stuff, Jeff.
Mate, it's called What Most People Think. Most people think that people who play the flute are wankers.
What most people think.
So, yeah, I guess the message they're trying to send out there, you know, Britain is open for business. Britain is open. It's like the fact they're talking about, you know, we're back on the world stage. We sort of were back on the world stage with Ukraine and other stuff. But I get it. You're trying to do a relaunch. But how business friendly are they? Because within the last week, we've had their transport secretary, Louise Hay, who quite incredibly came out and said that P&O were a rogue operator and that she basically had boycotted them for 2.5 years. And then it turned out that P&O had been bought out by DNP, who are a Dubai-based company that were coming to this investment a conference and we're planning on putting in £1 billion worth of investment. And so they were temporarily said, all right, how about we don't do that then? We don't do that. And then in fairness to the Starmer operation, they got across it, they built bridges, and I think that that investment is still going to happen. The question that begs, though, is, I mean, if you look at Louise Hay, a lot of people sort of rate her, but if you look at her with a sort of dyed plum hair, she looks exactly like somebody that was from the Party of Protest era. Mm. And they've claimed that they're not the Party of Protest anymore. But that was always my fear with them, is like Starmer and Reeves are one thing. But if you look at the PLP, the Parliamentary Labour Party, the National Executive Committee, the activists, the memberships, if they really changed at a fundamental level, I just don't know how a minister could get to a point where they think that that's okay to say in public. A lot of people might think what she said, but you can't say it out loud.
Well, they are the virtue signalling government, aren't they? Look, David Lammy goes to the UN and talks about Ukraine as a black man, as if anyone on the world stage gives a fuck about his identity and not the actual geopolitics of the issue, right? They didn't invite Elon Musk to the investment summit. The guy who's literally at the very moment he wasn't there was catching rockets that he just sent up into space. The richest man in the world, and they don't invite him. Why? Because he said some things on Twitter that they don't like.
He's a bit toxic.
Exactly, right? It's just absurd. And it does, I think you're right, actually. It does feel like it's a party of two pieces. One piece is like the people at the top. It's like we've imported the leadership of a failing council. You know, that's what the Starmer and people like him look like and sort of sound to me like. And then there is the student protest body, which is the rest of the party. And you've got those two together trying to coexist. So it doesn't feel to me that there's a depth of talent on the Labour benches. And I don't say that in any partisan way. You know, towards the end of the Tory government, I also didn't feel that really existed on their side either. And that's actually the thing that bothers me the most, is across parliament, across politics now, it's the small beasts, the weaselly, tiny little slivering things that are left. And it's very disappointing that these are the sorts of people that run our country, which is why I have very unpopular views on this, which is that we should be paying politicians 5, maybe even 10 times as much as we are. But I also do have a caveat to that, which is if they are caught engaging in any sort of corruption, they should be caned on the first offence publicly, and death penalty on the second.
Are we charging pay-per-view for that? I think there'd be big demand.
Well, we're in a very big economic hole, mate, so anything to raise a bit of tax revenue.
I really like it as well. With, you know, like with sport now, with the amount of camera angles that you can get, you can have replays, you know, because it'd be like, you know, one of those big boxing bouts that kind of like you pay pay-per-view, but it's always really short, but it would really be about the post-match dissection.
And I will just say as well to the lefties listening to this going, this is a bit far, this is a bit much, right? How much would you pay to watch Boris Johnson getting publicly caned in Parliament Square?
Weirdly, I think he would sort of pay for that as well. Like, he's a fucking pervert. I mean, just to sort of round off this section on Labour, one of the problems I suppose I think that they might have is that Starmer, he had to deal with this problem of the hard left. And then he sort of dealt with the problem of the soft left. And then he sort of just routed the left a little bit. And there was a degree where even I, you know, was a bit uncomfortable with the degree of glee to which he seemed to be rubbing their noses in it. So along the way, he's created quite a lot of enemies within his own party. So if you look at people taking the opportunity, they're still wrestling for the heart and soul of the Labour Party. They might have thought, well, this guy is going to get us our election win. But once we're in power, Bob, we will manoeuvre. Do you think he is... I mean, I suppose I've had a theory for a long time. I don't see him lasting 2 years. Now, that might sound quite radical for somebody that won a massive majority, but I just think he doesn't really have... I think he doesn't seem to have many friends in the party.
The vote share that he has is very small, so the majority is not necessarily reflective of public support, as we're seeing already. I will say, though, I actually really respect him for the way that he cleared out the loonies from the party. I thought that that needed doing. And it's a very good job that he did do that, because otherwise you would have all these people in the party really derailing it the whole time. And if you look at how crazy the Labour left is, it absolutely needed doing, particularly if you think about some of the positions in relation to Israel and Gaza and all of this other stuff that you find at the sort of Chris Williams and Jeremy Corbyn side of things. So I really respect, and I said that at the time, actually. I said he's going to have to come in and pick a fight with the fringes of his party, and he's done that. So all credit to him for that.
I mean, you talk about the loveless landslide. I can't remember if I've said this before, but it did feel like Labour's landslide. It felt like sex where only one person came and then... Even then, nothing came out, or it was just dust, you know? You know that kind of sex where one person's just been going at it a while, and even then, it just finishes.
I love the way you frame it as one person, as if it's blatantly not the man every single time. One person came. Who? I wonder who that might have been, mate.
I don't know, man. I'm 47. If I conclude anything these days, I'll take that as a fucking win. All right, just a quick hype. You may have seen from my socials that I'm doing a quick work in progress tour in March and April. It's about 20 dates. It's selling really well, and it looks like we're having to add a couple of dates already. So do get on that. It's not the main tour. It's the one before that. But what that means, tickets are a bit cheaper, but I'm going to try a few ideas. You might see me say some really bad shit that I would get cancelled for if I said in the main tour. That's the positive. The negative is that some things you might not ever hear me say again. But they're generally in more intimate venues, and I do a lot more interaction with the crowd. So if you fancy that, go on Live Nation and check it out. Constantine, are you involved in stuff coming up? Any live eventing you're doing coming up?
Not live events, but as always, YouTube Trigonometry and my own Substack, which is doing very well. You can just find that by going to ConstantineKissin.com or just Constantine Kissin Substack, where I put out regular articles that are very popular and people really enjoy as well. So Trigonometry and my Substack.
Have you been dragged at all recently? I mean, I've had my little pile on, or things pretty quiet at KK Towers. As we always say, 1K short of a very bad acronym.
You know, I get dragged all the time. I'm sort of like, don't really notice it anymore. The bigger your audience is, the more people you invariably piss off with anything you say, especially if you're someone like the two of us who has a more kind of balanced perspective and you don't going off the deep end in either direction, then the people who are will from both sides attack you. So,
well, I've noticed that recently you said a couple of things about the online right, and I do think something has happened, because in the late 2010s, early bit of 2020s, the online left was sort of miles ahead in terms of loopiness. But thank God the online right have really got themselves back in. They were 4-0 down. I'd say they've pulled it back to 4-3 now, because there are some fucking nuts. I mean, I get it now with people. Whatever I do on the BBC, they just go, oh, see, you've sold your soul. And I go, I sold my soul to the BBC ages ago. At least keep up.
That's how you saw me in the first time.
But I'm like, mate, you know, like the idea that doing the kind of comedy I do, that I wouldn't be dealing with the beef. But it's like anything. They've now gone to the point where I can't believe you do them. Can't believe you write for that paper. You go, all right, give me a list of the shit that I'm allowed to do to seem credible, because I can guarantee I won't have a fucking career and I'll be teaching again.
Well, right. I think that there are a lot of people who, from whom we never used to hear because they never had access to a microphone, from who used to be angry in the corner of a pub talking to themselves or whatever. You know what I mean? Now their opinions get broadcast onto your social media feed. So there are a lot of people that are just angry about things, and they have extreme views that they want you to have because they agree with some other things you said. They think that you're supposed to be the vehicle through which whatever shit they say in a pub is supposed to make it onto the mainstream platforms that you're on. And they're very disappointed and annoyed and angry when that doesn't happen.
Should we monetize that, though? Just go like, well, like there's levels, man. Do a crowdfund. It goes, you know, if you want me to specifically word for word say it next time on the radio, that's a grand. That's a grand a time.
See, Jeff, see, you're thinking like a businessman, mate. I like it.
This is how some people start political parties, mentioning no names. Okay, so we're talking about Elon's rocket now. I mean, first up, it was kind of petty not inviting him to the business thing right at the point where he was, as you say, getting a rocket back to Earth and landing it. Literally sort of like threading the eye of a needle. Like whatever metaphor you want for an impossible thing, you know, needle in a haystack. Every single one is what is so worth watching this video. The only thing I wonder is how much interest is it to regular people or outside? Because news is always interested in what billionaires are up to and space travel, and the broadsheets kind of are. But I always remember when we did it on topical shows, when I was writing for topical shows, it would always be the section that got dropped because the public never really gave a shit. And I was sort of wondering, I mean, are we talking stuff that's going to be possible in our lifetime, Constantine? Or is it that it's definitely beyond that and that's why people can't afford to give a shit?
Well, our lifetime is a highly questionable period of time, so we don't know exactly. But I think what Elon is aiming to do is to have the ability to take human beings to a colony on Mars within the next 40 years. So I think the reason people in the past wouldn't have given a shit about it is we made big leaps. We went to the moon. We put a man into space. You know, those were the two real major achievements. And then once you get to the moon, there's not really anywhere else to go for a very, 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 very long time, where it takes a completely different technological level to even be able to attempt it. So many of the things that have been happening were not particularly interesting to anyone who was a layperson. But what Elon is doing is attempting to create the opportunity for human beings to operate from more than one planet. It's a kind of insurance. It's a life insurance for humanity. And I think it's incredibly inspiring. I think one of, you know, if you look at human history, the big periods that really transformed consciousness and the way we operate, you know, the period of exploration in the 15th and 16th and 17th century, discovering new continents, it was the most incredible thing ever. It changed the way people operate, it changed the world forever, it changed the way we thought. The race to the moon, the race to put a man into space, these were things that inspired generations of scientists and people.
Kids as well. I mean, if you ask a little boy in the 80s, what you want to be? Astronaut. So
everyone
many kids want
to
be
an astronaut.
Now it's a footballer or a YouTuber. Influence. I feel like we've lost something.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. So I think actually, cynicism aside, Elon Musk is doing something that's very important, which is he's showing humanity that there are still frontiers to pursue. There is still greatness for human beings to aspire to. There's still things that haven't been discovered. There's still things that haven't been built. There's still things that haven't been done. And if we just open our eyes, there's a whole new broader horizon to look to. I think that's super important. And I think that's one of the reasons that a lot of people do feel very, very motivated by what he's doing.
You mentioned about, you know, that next step. Is he ever going to rest, though? Is it like a comic wanting to play bigger venues? You know, I always said when I got up to touring, average size of 500, I'd be that. That's fine for me. And once you do that for like 20 shows, you're like, okay, what's the next level? Mm. Is that going to be him? You know, like once he's built like a colony on Mars, it's going to have to be like a Holiday Inn on Saturn. And he'll never rest till he has that, like that, till he does that thing that has the whole world saying, wow. Like we just live in such different domains to to somebody like him. But he's toxic, so we can't have him attending business conferences. He's so toxic. I mean, I suppose that, you know, one of the things that makes Labour uncomfortable about him is he says things that are considered, all, you know, all right. I'm not sure it is, but like, and his aligning with Trump. Do you think he should be beyond aligning with a particular political movement? Is he too important to actually say, I'm picking one of these candidates?
I think that's a very strong argument. I think it's a very persuasive argument. On the other hand, if you look at it from his perspective, he might feel that America is really going down the drain and Trump, in his mind, is the solution. So he's throwing his weight and the weight of people like him behind Trump in order to make sure that he wins. But yes, I hope that he comes to a point, maybe after this election, where he ceases to attach himself to a political agenda, because I don't think he's a political person. And I think his role in human history is far beyond attaching himself to a particular party. I think he is one of the great engineers and discoverers and creators in human history. We've had, you know, he's like Brunel or whoever. These people come along once every few decades, or maybe even once a century, the Teslas of the world, etc. And it would be really a big shame if half of the Western world hated the guy who's making the next big leap in human progress because he happens to support a particular political candidate, and we are too stupid to be able to differentiate between someone's political views and someone's actual physical contribution to the world. And to your point about, is he ever going to give up? I don't think so. And I think we need people like that. You know, otherwise humanity, you know, we crawled out of the cave, and if we just went, oh, this is nice, and just stayed there, we'd all be there.
I don't know, maybe you do regret that a little bit. You know, when you look at, when I'm sitting there. So the other day I was up in the morning, it was like 4 a.m. and like nobody I knew was tweeting because it was too early. I was just hitting refresh going, please someone tweet something. I reckon cave times it was better at 4 a.m. You just sit there and look out across the plain. Or was it? Maybe you'd just be really scared of getting attacked by a fucking woolly mammoth.
In cave times, you would have been dead for about 15 years, mate.
Nah, but in my mind, I would have been one of the better ones. I would have been really, I would have invented stuff. I would have sorted my meat. I would have done one of those simple. It's weird, isn't it? Because when you think of yourself in the past, you imagine you're right. The average age then. I reckon I'd have made a solid 13 years. I would have got to 13 years. Then I would have died attempting to leap across a ravine just to prove myself to the elders. Like running, go, we can do it. We can get our people to the other side. And they've gone, all right, if this prick wants to give it a jump, give it a go. And then they would have named that ravine Norcott's Brook. Do you remember that? Constantine Kishen, it's been so nice to have you back on the show, mate. Always a pleasure. And as we say, we're going to get to that 10 million. People need to be, because so many people now say to me, you know, all my friends, they talk to me about trigonometry and recent like standout shows and stuff like that. It's become a part of the conversation. So can you give us any tip-offs of any great guests coming up?
Yeah, we're about to go to America and interview a whole bunch of people. We've got a few people from the center-left that I'm super excited about who are kind of big. Chris Cuomo coming on, hopefully. We've got Cenk Uygur coming on from the Young Turks as well. I don't know if these names really ring too many bells in the UK, but they're big American people on the left. We should hopefully have Douglas Murray back again if we can make that happen. We've got one of the most successful investors in the history of capitalism, Bill Ackman, coming on. He's become a very big post October 7th. He became very outspoken about politics, and he's back in Trump, having, I think, had a much more left-wing perspective in the past. And lots of other big guests, as we always do. We're going back on Rogan for the fourth time now as well. So lots of exciting stuff going on.
Okay. And meanwhile, you can catch me at the Saffron Walden Town Hall. So I guess, you know, we're both doing big deal stuff, buddy. Yeah. Yeah. Rogan, Saffron Walden. Same. It's the same.
Well, listen, I always enjoyed touring with you, and it was always a lot of fun, and you were one of the people in the comedy world that I whose help and guidance always...
No, it's very gracious what
you're... Stop interrupting me.
No, it's very gracious what you're doing here. What you're saying is you wouldn't go back, you wouldn't be seen dead in Saffron Walden because you're...
That's correct.
You're Joe Rogan.
When I had to go to Saffron Walden, you
had
were very
to.
Nice.
There it is. There it is. Had to.
Nice.
Listen, man, it's always a pleasure to have you on, and I'll be back next week with another episode of What Most People Think.